You're listening to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like civics and government, the law, anthropology, and archaeology. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Rabbi Harry Rosenfeld, the rabbi at Congregation Albert in Albuquerque, and the Reverend Bob LaValle, a minister at the First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque, two religious communities that have moved completely online during the pandemic. Rabbi Rosenfeld, Reverend Bob, thanks so much for being with us today. I'm curious about some of the other aspects of religious life. For me, and I'm sure for many of our listeners, a good chunk of religious life is the parts of gatherings that take place before and after services, and before and after the bar mitzvah, when people are eating and talking and drinking and eating and talking and drinking. And I'm curious what that is looking like during the pandemic, or if there's similar opportunities for people to sort of gather in these informal social ways, given that it hasn't always been available to them physically.
We do breakout rooms after the end of the service, sort of like our equivalent of coffee hour. People can go in small groups, and we want explicitly for BIPOC folks. And that's a thing we can't do live. I guess we could, but it would be weirder.
One of the things we lose by all this virtual stuff is the lobby. When we redesigned our building in Buffalo when I was there, everybody wanted to do this to the sanctuary or that to the chapel or whatever it was. And I pushed to create lobby spaces that people could just gather and sit together and have those informal conversations. For example, we took out the wall at the library, which was in the middle of the hall, and we put in a glass wall with sliding doors so people could walk in, people could see who was there. And it changed the whole dynamic of people who came, whether it was for a service or a life cycle event or for a social event or whatever. And so synagogue and church architecture is so important. And that was really driven home to me, right? Because one of the things I do is either before or after our service, I look at other people's services. And some people are actually doing it from their sanctuary spaces. And I look at the sanctuary space and I go, oh, that's just ugly, right?
And there's something dispiriting about an empty sanctuary, like a camera and the one person up front, like rattling around this giant space. It does not work.
Well, that too. And I was invited to an online wedding this weekend, and it was in a synagogue that I grew up in. And I knew it was ugly when I was a kid. And that was in the 60s, and it was designed in the 50s. And, you know, in the 2020s, 70 years later, it is ugly. And it really detracted from the feeling of the wedding.
Beauty matters.
Beauty matters. And Bob, you said earlier how seeing us in our home spaces lets people get to know us, right? I consciously choose to do this in my home study because it is that combination of the personal, but also Judaism and Jews are known as the people of the book. So I've got a small part of my library. I don't know what I'm going to put the rest of my library when I retire. But, you know, it tells people a little bit about who I am. The wedding picture, the books, the dog coming, all that stuff. And we didn't talk about this yet. One of the things that's really hard for me, because I work off of a laptop, is I have to connect a second screen because I'm also the host and I have to see lots of different pieces. And so while I try and look at the laptop, there are times I turn my head and I'm sort of seeing people out of the corner of my eye, but they know I'm not looking at them. And that's something I don't like. I've tried putting the screen above, you know, stacking them and whatnot. They're those kinds of technical issues which are parallel for what I think is key for any religious worship institution is an incredibly welcoming lobby. We have those issues online just like we have them in person. Just like we have security guards sometimes at services, we've had to introduce Zoom protocols to prevent Zoom bombing. You know, and we try and keep ours to a minimum. And we haven't had an incident, thank God, but other synagogues have, including here in Albuquerque. And
we actually have dedicated volunteers, one of whom is constantly watching the chat to see if there's anything inappropriate in the chat, and they'll automatically boot someone out. Hasn't happened yet. And another person is scrolling up and down the video to see if anyone's doing anything inappropriate in their video, and they'll automatically boot them out. But that's two volunteers every Sunday.
So when you say a Zoom bomb, Rabbi, what does that mean for the listener that might not have any idea what you're talking about?
If you don't have your Zoom security or any platform security settings set properly, it is not that difficult for someone to come in and take over your screen.
As the dominant speaker screen.
Exactly. And so we have made sure, and we double check every couple of weeks to make sure that they haven't changed, because Zoom keeps putting out updates and sometimes things inadvertently change, to make sure that our settings are all correct. Because the ultimate security is you don't let people in who don't pre-register, and you don't let people pre-register who you don't know. We don't want to do that because it's so off-putting.
Yeah. And it's against the open service ethos to begin with in the physical world.
Exactly. Exactly.
Finding the balance of all these things is exactly hard. Yeah.
That's right. So we ask people to put their first and last names up. Now, there's no guarantee they're going to tell the truth. I mean, seriously, if somebody wants to do damage or be malicious, they're going to find a way. But it's at least something. And we have, both during worship and during some of the adult ed things, we've removed people who have refused to change their names. We always say, if you don't know how to do this, let us know and who you are, and we'll do it for you. But Bob's iPhone tells me nothing, right? George's or Sally's or Carol's iPad is meaningless when it comes to security. And so we rename people when they let us, we ask them to rename themselves, but after three or four times of asking, we have removed people. And we have our settings so that if we remove somebody, not if somebody logs off and comes back on, but if we remove them, they can't come back on. Which became a problem the other day when I removed one of the speakers because they wouldn't change their name. I couldn't tell who it was. It was a family member in the funeral. In fact, someone who was going to give a eulogy. And she didn't change her name. And I had no idea who it was. And she wouldn't change her name. So I removed her. And then she sent me an email saying I got kicked out and I can't get back in. And I figured out who it was. And fortunately, this was before the funeral started. You know, it was just that sort of pre-gathering time because we try and log on 15 minutes early before everything. And I said, okay, I'm going to log off and log back on, and that will solve the problem. It did. But I'd rather make the mistake that way than allow an anti-Semite or just a kid who likes to pull pranks.
We had a lot of anxiety about that early on, where one congregant saying, hey, my son's kindergarten class got Zoom bombed, and the Zoom bomber shared pornography, and we're all kind of horrified right now. And we're actually afraid to come to church. And so I laid out, like, we have extensive protocols and we're pretty comfortable that it'd be tough to do anything for any amount of time, but it's real.
So I just have a question with all this. I mean, this is figuring out internet videography protocols, security. That's not really what you went to seminary or rabbi school for.
Well, Bob evidently did in his internship. And when I went to seminary, none of this existed.
Right, right. But I mean, what kind of teams are you working with? Who's behind the scenes with the cameras and the tech and the know-how? Or are you in Cantor or Googling late at night?
The Cantor and I do most everything. When we need it, our administrator will come on. High holidays, of course, we're different. We hired a professional and all that. We can't afford that. I have yet to find a volunteer over the age of 11 who has the technical skills that we might need. I'm also in a unique place because I am retiring, and there's only so many changes or new structures I'm willing to put into place before the new rabbi comes, because they're the one who's going to be here longer term, whether that's 5 years or 20 years, I don't know. That kind of decision, Ellen, needs to be made by the next person. You know, we're doing what we need to do. And it's not like we're sitting still, but I'm trying to be very judicious about changes and structures that I'm putting into place this year.
Well, you know, I'm actually a little surprised you're still playing the host in your services, Rabbi.
It's because I have no control issues whatsoever.
I know. I like to tell people I'm a laid-back, mellow control freak. And I actually do see that show up a little bit around online worship, where I have such strong opinions. And I bristle sometimes at some of the suggestions I hear. But I was our host initially just to get us going, because we had about 5 days notice to the first online service, and did it for a couple months, but really focused on training a team to take that over. And I never host anymore. I'm free to focus on the text and focus on the words, and that makes a huge difference. We've trained up a team of hosts, and we call them DJs. We've trained up ushers, who are our bouncers, And like you were saying, Rabbi, like how you provided iPads and so on. And we've been trying to find folks in our congregation who are not coming to service because they don't have internet access to say, hey, we'll work something out with you. You know, we'll cover you for internet access for a while and get you a device and get you on so you've connected. But one of the things we specifically do is we have a dedicated tech service person on every service, and we put their phone number in the chat. And like, if you're having a problem, call so-and-so at this number. We try to be even more proactive. If we see someone who's typing into the chat, I have no sound, or if we see them over and over trying to get into the meeting and falling out, we'll look up their number in the directory, and that tech person will call them and say, hey, I see you're struggling to get into the service. When we're doing that, we're practicing really good church to bring everyone along.
I love those ideas, and I'm not willing to put together a team like that because of the transition that the synagogue is about to go through. But I like a lot of those ideas, and I think those are some really, really, really good solutions.
4 or 5 months in, we finally just realized we needed more help. And so we hired a half-time tech arts director who was a professional videographer in his other life. So he's now working like 4 jobs. And so he's doing all the editing for us, but he's also managing the volunteers and doing the training. And he's often the host. And that was a gift.
Before we finish our program for today, I have one question. Neither of you might have an answer, but in hearing some of the technical challenges, say, of managing streaming to Facebook or streaming to YouTube or managing a bunch of people in a Zoom meeting, are there any platforms that have been discussed or are being developed that are specifically geared towards online worship? I'm thinking the security aspects, the virtual lobby aspects, the technical support aspects, being able to put up liturgical information in a coherent way. Have you heard anything like in the rumor mill of anyone that's actually developing a platform that would be perfect?
My first reaction is the thought of having to teach our congregation a new platform just makes me want to pull my non-existent hair out, you know?
So some of it is, even if there were something, there's something to be said for not changing horses once people are adapting.
Right. We started out purely on Facebook, and then we added in Zoom and Livestream. A lot of people are using Zoom, but they're using another technology with Zoom to make the Zoom experience better. You know, a lot of my colleagues are using those kinds of things. If that kind of software was to be created, it would have to come out of the Christian world, because the Christian world is the only world that is large enough to make it economically viable. Even if the Christian world were to develop this, and I'm sure maybe in the mega churches it's way farther along than it is for any of the rest of us, there still may not be a large enough market to make it viable.
Actually, you know, I want to say one thing real fast. I was looking at some stuff from our church archives the other day, and I saw where back in 1950, when First U was just forming, they were meeting at Temple Albert when it was still on gold. So thank you for that. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Well, this has just been a wonderful discussion. The time really flew, at least for me anyway. Reverend Bob, Rabbi Rosenfeld, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure.
Oh, you're so welcome.
And if you would like more information, you can visit Congregation Albert at congregationalbert.org and the First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque at uuabq.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.